What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, I'm Dr. Will Cole, leading functional medicine expert and best-selling author. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is The Art of Being Well. What's up, everyone? It's Dr. Will Cole, and welcome to The Art of Being Well. I am a leading functional medicine practitioner. I get to consult people around the world via webcam. I started one of the world's first functional medicine telehealth centers in the world over a decade ago. And I am a New York Times bestselling author. I wrote Intuitive Fasting and Ketotarian and The Inflammation Spectrum. If you want to learn more about the telehealth center, my clinical work, or the books, you can check it all out at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. Let's get to today's show. It is a solo episode, and we're going to get into it as far as gut health. It's probably a bad usage of words. We're going to talk all about gut health, and it's going to be freaking amazing. So I told you all that I would do probably every 4 to 6 episodes, I would do a solo episode. It's been a little bit longer because we've had so many amazing guests that I put off the solo deep dive episodes, but now is the time. The time is nigh, and we're going to talk all about gut health today. That probably is one of the top topics that I've been hearing on social media of what you all want me to discuss. And over the coming months, I will be putting in these solo episodes for us to geek out on all things health and wellness and labs and protocols and functional medicine goodness. And today's all about gut health. For those of you that are new to what functional medicine is, you have to check out the first ever episode of The Art of Being Well, because I give a good overview of what I do in functional medicine clinically and what we all do in functional medicine as far as our approach to health. But I'll briefly go over it now just to give you a basic overview. So number one, we interpret labs using a thinner reference range. So lab reference ranges conventionally are largely based off of a statistical bell curve average of people who go to labs. We're looking at optimal, not average, which can illuminate the gray area, because health and health problems exist on a spectrum. And that's actually what I talk about in my second book, In the Inflammation Spectrum, how by the time someone's actually diagnosable, it's oftentimes been years in the making. It's about 4 to 10 years prior to that diagnosis when things were brewing on this inflammation spectrum and this dysfunction function spectrum. And we want to look at optimal, where does your body function the best? That is the functional range. And that's where we get our name in functional medicine, hence the term functional. So we're looking at the functional optimal range. Where does vibrant wellness reside, which is typically a thinner, tighter range within that larger reference range on a lab? So we're looking at the gray areas. We're looking at optimal, not average on labs. We're running more comprehensive labs, which we're really going to get into today. And we realize we are all different. There's not going to be this one-size-fits-all reductionist perspective on the uniqueness that makes you, you and me, me, and we're all beautifully different. So it's really an exploration as far as the uniqueness of you. What's the bio-individuality of you? So that is another major part of functional medicine. All right, let's talk about the microbiome. You have 10 times more bacterial cells than human cells. So you're about 10 trillion human cells and upwards of 100 trillion bacteria. You're sort of the sophisticated host for the gut microbiome, and it governs a lot of things in our health, and it's not just about digestion. You don't necessarily have to have extreme digestive symptoms to have underlying gut components that could be driving your health issues. So many people will tell me, you know, when I'm consulting them online, they'll say, well, like I go to the bathroom all right. And then you really start talking about even that. And just because something's common doesn't necessarily mean it's normal. Just because it's your everyday bathroom routine doesn't necessarily mean it's normal. What is normal when it comes to bowel movements is 1 to 2 snakes a day. That's right, guys. I just compared your poop to snakes. But that's a good visual for you all to check the toilet afterwards to see, is your bowel movement normal or not? And if it's somewhere else on the Bristol chart, which is used for us in health and wellness and throughout gastroenterology as well, to look at, is your bowel movement normal or not? Is your poop normal or not? And what is normal is 1 to 2 snakes a day on the Bristol chart. Normal formation, not loose, not sluggish, not pebbles, not unformed, 1 to 2 snakes a day. So there you go. So it starts with that of people just realizing, oh, well, I thought it was normal because it wasn't like extreme symptoms, but I'm actually not having 1 to 2 snakes a day. And that is one check engine light, one clue that something could be off. And let's ask questions. Let's figure out what's going on upstream. So yes, it's about digestion. Of course, many people are struggling with digestive symptoms like painful bloating and looser stools and constipation or sluggish GI movement or things like acid reflux or GERD or people that have IBS or other inflammatory GI issues or GI autoimmune inflammatory issues. So yes, it could be about digestion, and we're going to talk about that today. But it's also about the far-reaching implications of what gut health means for your overall health. So the microbiome, this massive colony, this sort of think of it as a microbiome metropolis. It's all these amazing different colonies and neighborhoods within the microbiome that the diversity of it and the balance of the microbiome influences so many things in your body, digestion being one of it, but it's so much more than that. And we have to look at the overall landscape of the microbes that determine our health, because underlying GI issues, underlying gut microbiome imbalances and different dysfunctions of your gut health is associated with things like asthma. It's associated with autism, weight loss resistance. If you have trouble losing weight, that can have an underlying gut component. Thyroid issues, skin problems like acne, but any inflammatory skin issue can have gut components. Brain health issues like anxiety and depression and fatigue and brain fog, autoimmune conditions, arthritis, and type 1 and type 2 diabetes. So right there, all those things that I just mentioned, they all can have gut-centric components to their pathophysiology. They all can have gut-centric facets to them that give rise to the way that they are. So understanding gut health is way more than just digestive health, which that, of course, is very important, but it's also the systemic ramifications of underlying GI issues. So your gut is actually home to 80%, or 75 to 80% of your immune system. So Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, you know, he said all disease begins in the gut. Now research is catching up with antiquity that a lot of health problems that I just mentioned have been shown in the scientific literature to have underlying GI components to the way that they operate. And some researchers actually even say that underlying GI issues is actually a precondition for autoimmunity. It's a precondition for autoimmune conditions. So it's very important. There's something called the gut-brain axis. Your gut and brain are actually formed from the same fetal tissue. So when babies are growing in their mom's womb, The gut and brain were formed from that same fetal tissue, and they are inextricably linked for the rest of our lives through what's known as the gut-brain axis, or the connection between the gut and the brain. And if you think about it, the intestines kind of even resemble the brain. Well, 95% of serotonin is actually made in the gut and stored in the gut, the second brain. So this feel-good, happy neurotransmitter that many antidepressants work upon, 95% of that serotonin is actually made and stored in your gut, in your second brain. So what's good for your brain? We have to understand gut health to understand brain health. This bi-directional relationship between the gut and the brain has to be understood. And there's a whole field of research referred to as the cytokine model of cognitive function. Cytokines are pro-inflammatory cells. So it's research looking at how inflammation is impacting how our brains work. So things like depression and anxiety and brain fog and ADD and ADHD and autism all can have inflammatory components to brain health, but where does the inflammation originate? Well, there can be underlying GI issues where 75-80% of the immune system resides that's impacting brain health. So as someone can have intestinal permeability increase or leaky gut syndrome, there's research looking at leaky brain syndrome or increase to the blood-brain barrier permeability. Things are passing through the blood-brain barrier that shouldn't be able to pass through it because of this connection between the gut and the brain. So we have to measure markers that can we can actually see if there is a breach to the blood-brain barrier, just like we can look at intestinal permeability diagnostically as well. But I mean, it's not just about blood-brain barrier permeability. We also can look at different studies looking at the overgrowths of bacteria or different colonies of bacteria that are imbalanced that are actually influencing how the brain is expressed. It's influencing neurotransmitter production as well. So there's a lot of different pathways that are at play here and how researchers are exploring the connection between the gut and the brain. It's not just about the brain. It's not just about the immune system. And maybe I should say this too. We talked about how the gut is home to 75 to 80% of the immune system. When you're talking about inflammation, which is a product of the immune system, to understand the immune system, we have to look at where the predominance of the immune system resides, which is in the gastrointestinal system. So any inflammatory problem out there, which is all those health issues that I mentioned earlier, all inflammatory in nature, we have to look at this gut component, even just from an inflammatory standpoint too. So it's very, very important for us to understand gut health from an inflammatory standpoint and as far as the brain health standpoint. But also, this is where a lot of our hormones are converted as well. 20% of the thyroid hormones are converted from T4 to T3 in the gut in the presence of healthy, balanced microbiome. So if somebody has underlying GI issues, that can inhibit the activation of your thyroid hormones. So if you're looking at brain health, hormone health, immune health, inflammation, we have to understand gut health. And that's on top of, obviously, digestive issues as well. Juneshine hard kombucha is the most insanely delicious, better for you alcohol. It's actually made with real organic ingredients, and unlike other alcoholic beverages, they are transparent about every single ingredient they put in their products. I love them. It's actually better for you alcohol. It has real functional ingredients. It's low in sugar. It's easy on the gut. Amen. And it's gluten-free and full of probiotics. What more can you ask for, my friends? Juneshine is the champagne of kombucha. They actually use green tea and honey as opposed to the black tea and sugar that traditional kombuchas have for a smoother, less acidic taste. Best of all, it doesn't leave you with that I'm too full after drinking feeling, but it does give you a lighter, brighter buzz. Juneshine is sustainably produced. They just committed to becoming 100% carbon neutral. They donate 1% of all sales to environmental nonprofits. Hello. And their brewery is powered by 100% renewable solar power. And they plant trees for all those used to make their six-pack boxes. Juneshine is now delivering nationwide to your doorstep. Yes, you can get alcohol delivered to your doorstep. And yes, it's easy and hassle-free. We've worked out an exclusive deal for the Art of Being Well podcast listeners. Receive 20% off plus free shipping site-wide. I recommend trying one of their best-selling variety packs. It's a great way to try all their delicious flavors. Go to juneshine.com/willcole or use code willcole at checkout to claim this awesome deal. That's juneshine.com/willcole. Juneshine can also be found in over 10,000 stores across the country, including Whole Foods, Safeway, Kroger, and Publix. Today's program is brought to you by Athletic Greens, the most comprehensive daily nutritional beverage I have ever tried. With so many stressors in life, it's difficult to maintain effective nutritional habits and give our bodies and nutrients what it needs to thrive and feel freaking amazing. Our busy schedules, poor sleep maybe for some of us, exercise, the environment, stress, or simply not eating enough of the right foods can leave us feeling deficient in key nutrients. This is where Athletic Greens can help us. It is a life-changing nutritional habit. Their daily all-in-one superfood powder is your nutritional essential. It is by far the easiest and most delicious nutritional habit that you can add to your daily routine today and empower towards better habits throughout your life. They simplify the logistics of getting optimal nutrition on a daily basis by giving you one thing with all the best things. I'm consulting patients 11 plus hours a day. I have to have things on the go many times. And Athletic Greens is that for me in between consulting patients. Just one tasty scoop of Athletic Greens contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, a green superfood blend, and more that all work together synergistically to fill the nutritional gaps in your diet, increasing energy and focus, aiding with digestion, and supports a healthy immune system, all without the need to take multiple products or pills. And right now, Athletic Greens is offering my audience a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit my link today. Simply visit athleticgreens.com/willcole and join health experts like myself, athletes, and health-conscious go-getters around the world who make a daily commitment to their health every day. Again, simply visit athleticgreens.com/willcole and get your free year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs today.
Hi, I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. We're the co-hosts of a podcast called A Thing or Two. It comes out every Monday, and the basic premise is this. We share all the stuff we think more people should know about.
So that's apps, recipes, books, the nationwide Haagen-Dazs vanilla bean shortage that nobody else was talking about.
No one.
Our preferred vacuum brands, of which we have multiples, and critical explorations of our unique approaches to paper towel usage.
Listen, we think you're going to like it. A lot of people do. And who's to say you'll be any different? Listen and subscribe wherever it is you listen and subscribe to podcasts.
So let's talk about some of the top things that I see when I'm consulting patients online, just different health issues, different gut health issues that I see clinically. So number one, it's SIBO. I see SIBO a lot. A lot of people are coming in because they think they have SIBO or they've been previously diagnosed and they want me to confirm it and look at the different types of it as well. So SIBO, it's an acronym that stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. If you haven't listened to the Phoebe Lapine episode on The Art of Being Well, definitely check that out. We talk all about SIBO there. But as its name implies, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. People can have SIFO as well, small intestinal fungal overgrowth. But SIBO is definitely more common, and it is due to oftentimes a lack of what's called an MMC, migrating motor complex. So you have this wave-like motion in the intestines that's keeping bacteria, all those trillions of bacteria in the large intestine, and a lack of MMC is allowing the growth to slowly go into the small intestine where it shouldn't be in large amounts, and that is associated with all different types of health issues. I mean, SIBO is associated with people that have chronic constipation or IBS-C, people that have looser stools or IBS-D. They could have flare-ups between the two. SIBO is associated with irritable bowel syndrome, of course, cramping, people that have gas and bloating. And the bloating typically is progressive throughout the day. So you'll notice in the evening, bloating is more prominent. It's associated with nausea. It's associated with acid reflux, heartburn, GERD. SIBO can be the underlying culprit for all of these problems. So it's really important to understand it. But again, it's not just about digestion. While those things can definitely be painful and horribly miserable for people struggling with SIBO, SIBO is also associated with things like type 2 diabetes, autoimmune conditions like type 1 diabetes, autoimmune thyroiditis or Hashimoto's disease, acne, rosacea. So a lot of the gut skin axis and people that have inflammatory skin issues can also have digestive problems, and SIBO can be driving both, and even things like fibromyalgia. So we have to look at the connection between these things. What can underlying GI issues, what can they do to the rest of your body? And SIBO can definitely wreak havoc, and it's associated with a lot of different problems, whether it's causing it or it's just correlated with these issues. It's a larger sign of disturbance and imbalance in the body. So that was SIBO, which should be differentiated here, because SIBO is not known, it's not understood to be pathogenic bacteria. It's not an infection. It's normal bacteria growing out of balance. It's the breaking of that Goldilocks principle. Not too high, not too low, but just right. So that's what SIBO is. But then you can have underlying gut infections as well. It could be things like SIFO, which isn't necessarily, again, pathogenic yeast and fungus. It could be Candida albicans or Candida albicans, which is normal yeast, but it's like weeds overgrowing in this gut garden, where that's what SIBO is for bacteria. And that's what SIFO can be. We all have some lower levels of yeast and fungus. It's actually called the mycobiome. The prefix myco, M-Y-C-O, denotes yeast and fungus. So part of healthy balance microbiome and mycobiome is normal, but weeds that can proliferate through this gut garden, that isn't good. That can starve off good balance within the microbiome and create an immune reactivity, raise inflammation levels up, impact your digestion, and then can trigger systemic inflammatory cascades throughout the body. So we have to look at yeast overgrowths, fungus overgrowths, and then actual infections, people that have parasitic issues, or bacterial infections like H. pylori. These are all really important things that I look at on labs to understand not just the digestive issues, but any other inflammatory problem as well. And maybe I should clarify this, is that as far as parasites are concerned, some people are asymptomatic with certain protozoans and parasites too. So it's not necessarily something that everything has to be treated, but it does have to be understood and to put into context with what this person's going through. So many people can live with protozoans or different things within their microbiome and they'll never know it. But for some people, they just have so much going on, and then an overgrowth of one of these things can definitely be a source of irritation to the immune system and can upregulate these inflammatory pathways. Another thing that I see clinically a lot are people that have food reactivities, whether there's some sort of food sensitivity, food allergies, food intolerances. Oftentimes those terms are conflated, but if you're being a little bit specific with this, allergies and sensitivities are immune mediated. Allergies are one pathway. Sensitivities are another pathway as far as the immune system's concerned. And then food intolerances are typically understood to be non-immune mediated, which they would be classified as an enzyme deficiency. So someone that has a lactose intolerance is lacking the enzyme lactase to break down that dairy sugar. And then there are many other types of intolerances as well. In functional medicine, I'm looking at all of those things and all the different pathways and understanding gut health as a whole. One of the things that we look at, obviously, is gluten reactivity. And many people will think maybe gluten's not right for them, and then they'll go to their doctor, and then they'll run the basic gluten test with your conventional doctor. And that's just an incomplete perspective on the complexity of gluten reactivity or wheat reactivity. So for people that are new to this, gluten is the protein that's found in grains like wheat and rye and oat and barley and spelt and different grains. But just running one gliadin, which is a protein within wheat. It's just an incomplete perspective. We have to look at more than just alpha and gamma gliadin. We have to look at overall the other glutenins, the other transglutaminase markers, the other markers that are to understand it. Because if you're just looking at one piece of that larger gluten puzzle, you could miss something diagnostically. And not everybody has to have these tests ran. I mean, some people can just do an elimination diet and see how the body responds to it. But a lot of people really enjoy having things with wheat in it or having different types of grains that could have gluten in it. And they want to see, is that something they should avoid or not? And some people do fine with certain good quality sources of wheat. And there definitely is evidence out there to show maybe it's not just about gluten. Maybe it's about what we're spraying on the grain supply. Maybe it's the way that the grain is prepared. Many people do better with things like sourdough wheat over regular wheat, or maybe they aren't getting sprouted grains or, you know, different, better versions of it. If it's not organic and sprouted, they may be fine with it. But if it's the regular wheat, they don't do fine with it. Or again, the sourdough bread, maybe they're fine with that, but not the regular wheat. Or where the grain is grown. I see many people do better with these ancient grains that have gluten and they're fine with those, but the regular wheat, they're not fine with those. Or if they're on a trip to Europe or they live in Europe, they're fine in Europe having wheat there, but they come to the United States where maybe they spray more glyphosate or different pesticides or herbicides on the grain and they aren't so good with it. So it's important for us to look at the context of it. It's not just about demonizing wheat, but it's understanding how your body's reacting to it. Another facet when it comes to food sensitivities are cross-reactive foods. These are foods that can mimic gluten. So things like milk and gluten-free grains like rice and oats and like steel-cut oats or quinoa or sorghum or millet or hemp or amaranth, tapioca, these can all be similar enough in structure to gluten that people that have gluten sensitivities can be cross-reactive to these other foods. So even things like soy and egg and corn, I didn't mention that. Rice, potato, I mentioned rice. So a lot of things that are healthy enough foods, like they could be part of a healthy diet, but because your immune system's primed and stressed out and reacting to lots of stuff, it can think that those proteins and those foods are gluten. So if you've gone gluten-free and you still have symptoms, gluten cross-reactive foods could be a sign of how your immune system's treating that food. So it's as if you've never gone gluten-free to your immune system. So let's just say that, you know, chocolate is positive on that cross-reactive lab. It would be a gluten sensitivity to chocolate. Or if potato was positive on that lab, it would be a gluten sensitivity to potato or a gluten sensitivity to rice or gluten sensitivity to corn or whatever other food we're talking about. This is a blood test that I run for patients around the world to kind of look at the uniqueness of them. Again, this is bio-individuality. We're all different. So this may not even be an issue for you, but it's important, especially when you're trying to do all the right things. And most of my patients, when I'm meeting them, they are extremely erudite. They know more than most people do when it comes to health and wellness. They know more than most doctors do when it comes to health and wellness, but they're still struggling. And labs can give insight into the complexity of them, their own unique bioindividuality to see, okay, how do we take this to the next level? How do we really give this the attention that it deserves instead of just spinning our wheels or adding to our pile of things that we've tried for a few weeks, but then we're not making any ground. I don't want to add to my patient's pile of things that they've tried. I want them to really deal with this, sort this out, understand what's going on here so they can move past it, so they can have agency over their health and freedom from these things. Because I see so many people kept back from living the life they were created for because of their struggling with different inflammatory health issues. As you all lovely people know, I am consulting patients via webcam all day long, from sunup to sundown. I'm staring at a computer for the past decade. Like many of you, you know my pain, you feel my pain. Because when working at a computer all day, we can get sore eyes, dry eyes, we can get headaches, we can get digital eye strain, watery eyes, fatigue. It's not fun at all. I have found something that has been a game changer for my day at work, and even on the weekends I use it. The blue light computer glasses from my friends at Blue Blocks. During the day when I'm working on screens or under artificial light, these things have saved my eyes and how I feel. I'm just so much more productive and I'm not always struggling with dry, watery eyes. I don't have eye fatigue anymore. I don't get headaches from looking at screens all day long. These glasses have been amazing. So what is Blue Blocks all about? They are made at Optics Laboratories in Australia. They are not mass produced in factories in Asia. They have stylish frames that have been featured in QC and Vogue. They have science-backed technology tested to ensure they actually work. Since wearing the blue light computer glasses from Blue Blocks, I literally have no more digital eye strain or headaches. I feel amazing. Glasses come in non-prescription, prescription, and reading options. They have glasses for every need. Blue light for helping with digital eye strain, summer glow for helping with low mood, and migraines, and Sleep Plus for improving your sleep. Blue Blocks also has other amazing products such as low blue light bulbs, red light therapy devices, and 100% blackout sleep masks. Hello, all backed by science. Blue Blocks ships worldwide in rapid time. I got mine very quickly. And they have an easy return and exchange policy. Go to blueblocks.com/WillCole and use coupon code WillCole to save 15%. That's blueblocks.com, blueblox.com/WillCole and use coupon code WillCole to save 15%. We can't really talk about GI issues or underlying gut health problems without talking about leaky gut syndrome, which I touched upon it a little bit. But intestinal permeability are things passing through the gut that shouldn't be able to pass through the gut, namely those food proteins that I just mentioned, where the gluten protein or the egg protein or the dairy protein or that gluten-free grain protein can pass through the gut lining, and then the immune system is triggered because it sees an undigested food protein and tags it with an antibody and then can cross-react against thyroid tissue or brain tissue or joint and muscle tissue. And that is the seminal event for things like autoimmunity. That molecular mimicry can trigger a cascade of an autoimmune attack against certain things. So it's really important to see if leaky gut syndrome or increased intestinal permeability or hyperpermeability of the gut lining is a facet for you, because leaky gut syndrome is linked to things like arthritis, asthma, autism, autoimmune diseases. Neuroinflammation or brain inflammation is associated with fatigue. Heart disease is associated with, of course, IBS or irritable bowel syndrome. Type 1 and type 2 diabetes, it's associated with skin issues, thyroid problems, weight loss resistance. Basically, if you have any inflammatory problem, you have to look if increased intestinal permeability is a facet for your health puzzle. So all of these things, all of these different issues that we talked about, whether it be SIBO or SIFO or people that have other dysbiosis or infections, people that have food sensitivities, people that have leaky gut syndrome, all of these have different labs that I run for people to see what facet would be a component for your health puzzle. And it may be one of those, it may be all of those, it may be none of those, but it's important to do our due diligence clinically to see and understand your health puzzle. And maybe I should say this for people that are new to this topic, but once intestinal permeability is triggered and people have dysbiosis or these bacterial overgrowths or these different imbalances within the microbiome, anything's fair game, whether it is some sort of food sensitivity, because I talked about cross-reactivity, but really the immune system can react to just about everything under the sun when the immune system's primed to that. So a lot of times people ask me, well, what do I think about food sensitivity testing? I think there's a place for it, but oftentimes you'll see all these foods lit up on these labs as being quote unquote sensitive, but it's less to do with those foods and more to do with the immune system's overreaction to those foods. So if you went to that lab the next day or the next week, you could see different foods being lit up or positive on those food sensitivity testing or those food intolerance testing, whatever, however they're marketed. So I don't put much weight on them as far as, you know, if I have a sensitivity to apple or to some sort of broccoli or vegetable, it's less to do with those foods, more to do with the immune system's reaction to it. And remember, all of these labs specifically, especially those food sensitivity tests, those are all snapshots in time, meaning they're going to change from day to day. And we're looking at that time where when you collected that lab at 8 a.m. in the morning on a Thursday, it's not necessarily going to be that exact static immune response every day. And that's important to put any lab that you have ran, you want to put that into context. So when the immune system's primed like this, you can have reactions to lots of different foods. So I have patients that have histamine intolerances, so different foods that are higher in histamines, a lot of fermented foods, and there's a big, massive list of higher histamine foods, or even histamine-releasing foods that we have to look at for some patients. People have reactions to oxalates, which are different compounds in foods. People that have reactions to salicylates, which are different compounds in different foods. People that have reactions to lectins, which are proteins found in different foods. Gluten is a type of lectin, but there are many other types of lectins as well. And people that have FODMAP intolerances too. FODMAPs are those fermentable sugars, fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. Basically, they're fermentable sugars in things like onions and garlic and different cruciferous vegetables. So people that have SIBO and different types of bacterial overgrowth, they could be more FODMAP intolerant, but it's not the FODMAP's fault. It's the overgrowth that's driving that FODMAP intolerance. So same with even like histamine intolerances. So it's not necessarily the histamine's high histamine food's fault. Like let's say a kombucha or sauerkraut can be higher in histamines. It's not necessarily poor old sauerkraut's fault. It's some sort of underlying GI issue that's causing that reaction in the first place. And that's the same as those food sensitivity at home tests that you can get and order and do it for yourself. It's not necessarily those foods that are coming back positive on that lab that are the actual underlying culprit. It's the immune system's overreaction or the underlying GI issues that are at play there. You have to deal with what the underlying gut issue for you is to overcome those food reactivities. That's a really important point here. So the goal isn't just remove those foods forever and your problems are solved. That may be a short-term decision. Like if somebody has FODMAP intolerance, yes, going low FODMAP or decreasing those higher FODMAP foods for a time. And again, refer back to that Phoebe Lapine episode on The Art of Being Well if you want greater context to that. And there's lots of free content for all of this stuff at drwillcole.com. But the point is, if you go low FODMAP for a while, if you have SIBO or something that's causing that intolerance to these higher FODMAP foods like onions and garlic and cruciferous vegetables and different grains can be higher in FODMAPs as well. Yes, that's the goal, but you have to deal with the underlying what's driving that FODMAP intolerance in the first place. So if you have SIBO, you have to deal with the SIBO, not just avoid FODMAPs for the rest of your life and think that's going to solve it. Because the minute you bring the FODMAPs back in, it's going to flare back up. You're creating this sort of temporary relief, but what's the long-term game? And that's my job in functional medicine is no matter what it is, let's deal with the underlying GI issues. You can have that flexibility. You can have that wiggle room and you don't have to live with such a tight food plan for the rest of your life. And that healing process takes time. I'm with most of my patients for months working at this. I mean, I'm going to start seeing relief pretty soon in weeks, but the overall gut healing process can take anywhere between 6 months for some people. It could take 18 to 24 months for people that are further down on that inflammation spectrum, people that have autoimmunity, people that have more wild or out of control food reactions. I have patients that are reacting to just about every food under the sun. We have to have some big interventions sometimes for these more severe cases. That takes time. I'm with some of those people for 18 to 24 months, a year and a half to 2 years working on their gut health. Not that they have to wait that long to feel good. Every month they're moving in the right direction, but they have to build that resilience capacity. But again, by the time someone's diagnosed with some of these autoimmune conditions, it's about 4 to 10 years prior to that diagnosis. So what has taken upwards of a decade to get to where it's at now, it's going to take time to rebound and start to heal and untangle these reactions and calm things down and create resilience once more. So then the next natural question is, what actually leads to poor gut health? So number one, we have to look at the foods that we eat. And the modern Western diet can oftentimes it'll disrupt the microbiome and raise inflammation. And the hard truth about diet is this. I mean, food can either fuel health or fuel health problems. There's no benign food. There's no Switzerland meal. But because of bioindividuality, i.e. we're all created differently, what works for you, even if it's something that's healthy, may not work for the next person, especially when you're looking at the onslaught of the hybridization of different food crops, the genetic modification of certain food crops, the spraying and the soil depletion and the way foods are prepared and the amount we're eating of certain foods. And we're always eating oftentimes, we're not giving our gut a break, which is something that I talk about at length in intuitive fasting in my book. The point is there's this genetic epigenetic mismatch when it comes to food. There's this evolutionary mismatch. Our microbiome, which has evolved with us for a long time, is living in a brave new world, just like our genetics are. And the microbiome is being disturbed, and that's disturbing and triggering latent genetic predispositions that have been lying dormant for 10,000 years, but they're being triggered and awoken like never before because of this genetic epigenetic mismatch, this chasm between our DNA and the world around us, and the food we eat and the water we drink and the air we breathe is a major part of that. Another component that can really impact gut health are medications. And obviously, many people have to be on some medications. So I'm not anti-medication. We just have to look at the potential side effects, and most medications come with some side effects. So it may be needed and may be necessary, but we still need to be informed. We still have to have informed consent with things that we are taking as well. So I definitely would advocate you to research things, talk with your doctor, because some medications that maybe don't need to be taken every day, or maybe you can work to come off of them, and that's something that I work with patients on, is see if their doctor can reduce or eliminate certain medications, because some are associated with impacting gut health. Even over-the-counter medications that aren't prescription medications like NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen, can affect your gut health. These medications are needed sometimes. I'm not anti people taking NSAIDs, but they are associated with increasing intestinal permeability. And that's really important. If somebody's struggling with leaky gut syndrome and is taking NSAIDs every day, I mean, what's the long-term ramifications of that? What's the end game? And my job is to say, okay, what are there alternatives we can use so we can not be so negatively impacting gut health? Another component of things that can increase gut health problems are stress, and people that are going through stressful times in their life, or even past traumas, childhood traumas, or just life traumas, have been shown to increase intestinal permeability or leaky gut syndrome, impact the balance of the gut microbiome, because high levels of our primary stress hormone, cortisol, and decreased oxygen to our gut are two ways that chronic stress can play a role in damaging our gut health. Another thing to consider when it comes to things that can negatively impact your gut health is alcohol. I know I'm going to lose some friends here, and there's nothing wrong with good quality alcohol, and even, you know, places like Juneshine, they're a sponsor on the podcast, like they're a hard kombucha that has, you know, good beneficial probiotics. I'm not anti people having like a dry farms wine or a Juneshine or some healthy alcohol in moderation if you have a healthy relationship with these things, but these things should be not an everyday, all day thing. They should not be even an every night thing, I would say, especially if they're higher sugar alcohol or not a healthy version of alcohol. A glass of alcohol every once in a while may not do much to our gut health. And there's actually studies to show some of it can be actually beneficial to us, but consistent alcohol consumption, or even occasional for those dealing with severe gut issues, can irritate your intestines, suppress the hormones that protect against inflammation and gut permeability. So this isn't oftentimes talked about, and I can't tell you how many times this comes up when I'm consulting patients, is how often they're drinking alcohol and they think, oh, it's just a glass every night. Well, if you're going through GI issues, you may want to take a break for a while to allow your gut to actually have time to heal. Another facet that can impact gut health are hormone imbalances. So slow intestinal healing time has been linked with hormone imbalances of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, thyroid hormones, and cortisol. This can lead to leaky gut syndrome and explain why you may not be able to heal despite your best efforts. You may need to focus on balancing your hormones before you can heal your gut. Now, this is that interconnected, complex, different communication lines between every system of your body. Another word for functional medicine is systems medicine or integrative medicine. So we're integrating all the different facets of the body or understanding the systems of the body that can be at play here. So it's really important that it's the chicken or the egg sort of thing, is that yes, poor gut health can decrease the conversion of T4 to T3 or impact hormonal communication, but the opposite is also true. Hormone imbalances can also perpetuate GI issues as well. So you have this big vicious cycle of imbalance in the body. Another component when it comes to hormone imbalances, when it comes to gut health, is blood sugar problems. When blood sugar skyrockets, compounds known as advanced glycation end products or AGEs become elevated as well and can increase the permeability of your gut. And when you're having lots of foods that are refined carbohydrates or higher in sugar, that can also feed bacterial overgrowths and fungal overgrowths as well. Another component to understanding what can cause GI issues are neurological problems. Remember, your gut and brain were formed from the same fetal tissue while you were growing in your mom's womb, and they continue the special bond throughout our whole life through this gut-brain axis, or the connection between the gut and brain. Because of this connection, brain problems can lead to leaky gut syndrome and vice versa. I see many people over the years that have had traumatic brain injuries, or they've had a car accident or whiplash, some sort of insult to their brain. It could be a sporting accident as well, where that brain injury impact their gut health. And that can also decrease that migrating motor complex, that wave-like motion that I mentioned earlier, and can cause bacterial overgrowths, fungal overgrowths, and GI issues, or even just GI nerve innervation, so that you're just not going to the bathroom properly because of that brain injury. So both sides of the gut-brain axis has to be understood oftentimes for people that have brain health issues and GI issues. So what the heck do you do with all this stuff? So first of all, I would see if this is an issue for you or not. So we run labs for people around the world. If you want to learn more about that, the telehealth center, you can go to drwillcole.com. And there's many functional medicine doctors that are local too. So finding somebody on functionalmedicine.org if you want someone local as well. That's the Institute for Functional Medicine's database there. But looking at things like gut permeability labs and measuring antibodies to zonulin and occludin, which are the proteins that govern your gut lining. We have to look at things like lipopolysaccharides antibodies. These are bacterial endotoxins that can be on these gram-negative bacteria that can overgrow in the gut. So again, going back to the analogy of weeds overgrowing in this gut garden, we have to look at opportunistic bacteria and pathogenic bacteria that are higher in these lipopolysaccharides, which can increase intestinal permeability and can trigger that molecular mimicry that I mentioned earlier and create inflammatory cascades throughout the body. Another lab that I would consider beyond intestinal permeability labs are just a comprehensive stool analysis to understand the overgrowth of the bacteria or the landscape of the microbiome, if there is any imbalances. And then we can also look at GI inflammatory markers like calprotectin and lactoferrin and lysozyme. We can measure intestinal permeability actually on some stool tests as well. Most gut permeability labs, when you're looking at leaky gut syndrome, oftentimes are blood markers that you're measuring the markers against occludin and zonulin and the lipopolysaccharides, LPS markers. But you can also look at intestinal permeability on stool tests as well. And looking at if there's any parasite overgrowths or fungal overgrowths, that will also be found on a stool test. And then if somebody has SIBO, they would or want to see if they have SIBO, we would run a SIBO breath test and see if it's hydrogen or methane dominant. And then there's a third type called hydrogen sulfide. So we have to look at these three different types of SIBO and understand the complexity of them because they all respond to different types of protocols and tailoring the protocol specific to that type of SIBO or SIFO or just dysbiosis as a whole. So from those diagnostics, I can tailor protocols specific to those to that case. And then we clinically monitor people and coach people and guide people through their journey. We're a concierge functional medicine telehealth center. If you want to learn more about that, you can check it out at drwillcole.com. But if you're dealing with more severe GI issues, it can take anywhere again between 12 and 24 months to really get to a great place. You'll be feeling great along the way. That would be my goal for most people. but it's going to take time to get that. You can see improvements each month, but long-term healing can only be achieved when you really put in the time in for your gut health and your overall health. I see many people that are like, well, I did 4 weeks of this or 6 weeks of this, or I stuck with this plan for whatever, 2 months. Look, that could be, I want you to see some change there, but the idea that you're going to solve all your problems if you're struggling with more severe GI issues, it's going to take longer than that for most people. And I realize there's a lot of you right now that are like, okay, I'm dealing with some problems, but I don't want to jump down the whole functional medicine trail right now. I don't want to reach out to somebody in functional medicine right now. I get that. And that's honestly why I write a lot of the books that I write. When I wrote The Inflammation Spectrum, that's a lot of what we're talking about here. It's understanding how your body reacts to certain things and understanding what your body loves and hates when it comes to food reactions. So check out The Inflammation Spectrum if you want to do it on your own. There's a quiz in the book where you can track your progress there. Obviously, it's not the same as a lab, but at least it's some feedback for you to learn how your body's going through this healing journey and how you're doing through this healing process. Some other ideas for people that are struggling with GI issues or different inflammatory problems, but want to do some stuff on their own is focusing on more soups and stews. So I think that things that are gentle on the gut, not having so many raw vegetables and raw foods, is definitely a great idea. So think soups and stews, things that are gentle. If having a bone broth base can definitely be very calming and restorative to the gut, and having the vegetables cooked, soft, pureed, having the meat soft and not hard to digest, so you really can give your gut time to repair. It can be quite nourishing to a healing gut. Another thing to think about if you don't eat animal products or don't have so many animal products, making like a galangal broth, which is related to ginger, or doing a ginger broth or a vegetable broth or a seaweed broth, which can be quite calming as well. You're not going to get a plant-based collagen. There's no such thing, really. There are collagen supporters that are plant-based, but not fully collagen. So I would recommend maybe even some chicken broth or fish broth if, you know, it may sound gross to some people, but people that are pescatarian, they would have fish broth with their soups and stews. Another great gut healing tool that you can do on your own is intermittent fasting. I talk about the exciting research in intuitive fasting of how intermittent fasting can reset the microbiome circadian rhythm. So we have this wave-like rhythm of bacteria within our gut. Some colonies are higher in the morning, some colonies are higher in the evening, and it's ebbing and flowing throughout the 24-hour cycle. Well, people that have underlying GI issues, their microbiome circadian rhythm is disrupted and imbalanced and dysfunctional. Well, intermittent fasting is a great way to reset the microbiome circadian rhythm. It's like resetting your gut clock. And the research is so exciting. And that's one of the main benefits of intermittent fasting, is dealing with these underlying GI imbalances, dealing and lowering GI inflammation, allowing your gut time to heal. And that's a lot of what I talk about in intuitive fasting, and it's completely free to do intermittent fasting. So definitely check out intuitive fasting for a low-cost resource for you if you're interested in that. And then the question that you all are thinking about is, what supplements does he recommend? There are a handful of supplements that could be good ideas. Remember, food is first. You can't supplement your way out of a poor diet. But these are some supplements that I integrate in protocols when I'm building a patient's protocol. But these are things that you can get online as well. Just make sure you're getting good sources of them. Vet the company that you're going for, because there's a lot of products out there. It could be overwhelming. But for the sake of simplicity, I'll just name the main active ingredient, but read labels and trust the company that you're buying from. But things like L-glutamine, it's an essential amino acid that's used up more quickly by your body during times of stress. So it is the preferred fuel for our guts and enterocyte cells. So it can be a great way to support gut rebuilding. The people that have intestinal permeability, L-glutamine can be quite a restorative supplement to consider. Not necessarily something you want to take or need to take long term, but for a time while the gut's healing, it's not a bad supportive tool. Colostrum, lactoferrin and colostrum works as a prebiotic to stimulate the growth of good bacteria, as well as promoting cell growth in the intestines to actually repair a damaged gut. Then people ask oftentimes, because it's from dairy, should people with dairy sensitivities have colostrum? Depends. I find that it's tolerable to most people. Make sure that you're getting good source colostrum, obviously. But I find that people that have dairy sensitivity don't react to the colostrum, and not a negative thing. It's only a positive thing for these people. But obviously every case is different. You definitely want to talk with your doctor about that. Slippery elm is another herb to consider. This type of elm tree works as a way to reduce inflammation in the gut. And you can find this in tea or supplement form. Typically, you'll find blends with a lot of these things, like even L-glutamine and slippery elm. Marshmallow root is another one. Marshmallow root actually is a root naturally, right? But it fights to repair a damaged gut lining from intestinal permeability issues by coating the GI system. And you can find that in a blend with oftentimes slippery elm and L-glutamine, or in capsule form or tea form. Another herb that you'll oftentimes see in the gut healing space is DGL, or deglycerhizinated, say that 10 times fast, deglycerhizinated licorice, or DGL, is a great way to support gut health. You can sip on this DGL to give your gut a calming, restorative time, and it just calms down GI inflammation, basically. And a medicinal mushroom that I like that has some solid data around it is turkey tail. It's a medicinal mushroom that works wonders against gut overgrowths like SIBO. It can have some antimicrobial supporting facets to it, and even things like SIFO or Candida overgrowth. Probiotics are one thing to consider as well. There's so many different probiotic things on the market. Depends on what's going on. If people that have more food reactions, they have SIBO, they have FODMAP intolerance, you definitely want to be careful with too many prebiotics, which can feed the overgrowths. And even with probiotics, I mean, these are regulators of the microbiome. They sort of instruct the microbiome economy, if you will, which can cause some GI symptoms if you do too much too soon. So start off judiciously with all of these things, because they all are regulators of the microbiome. You don't want to be flippantly taking tons of stuff. And that's the problem that I see oftentimes with good intentions, but people having these supplement graveyards, just taking tons of things with good intentions, but they don't necessarily need to be on all of them, or it's not even desirable to be on all of these. So oftentimes I'll streamline it and be as succinct and as targeted as we can, so you're not over supplementing or taking things that are not very effective, or taking things that may be good down the road, but you don't have to be taking everything all at once. So hopefully this was helpful, my friends. I could wax eloquently about gut health for way too long. But if you want to learn more about gut health, about autoimmunity, different inflammatory health issues, you can learn about it all at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. That's it for today. Thanks again for hanging out with me. I would love to know what you think about the art of being well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit subscribe and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.